This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. For those astute listeners, you may have noticed the car sounds a little different. That's because I'm driving Nana's car. So, let's see. Got to remember which button is which. Yeah, that's it. Okay. I'm actually over at my mother-in-law's house and driving home from there. We're shuffling cars around a little bit. The young man who lives in our rock house, his transmission blew up. Sadness. That was sadness. He had just gotten himself a newer car. And so, yeah, that was a little sadness. I'm just going to check real quick. I don't have a light anymore because I don't have a remote control, which is a saga all its own that I have told in the past. So I'm just going to pick up this recorder for a moment, make sure that the light is on. Oh, I always do that. Bang onto it. Okay, there we go. Are we moving? Yes, we're moving. Okay, good. Sorry. A little weirdness on the stereo field there. Anyways, so as part of him getting his transmission fixed, there was a sensor that was weird, and they said that they wouldn't warranty the transmission for the next 3 years or 100,000 miles if he didn't get that sensor fixed within 30 days of having the transmission work done. So he was able to get it in for tomorrow, and he goes to work early enough in the morning that we are swapping cars around right now. So we are in the process of closing up for the month of August. It's been a little exciting. This is actually our first close that we did without Rusty, who is the guy who'd been there for 35 years. That's very exciting. But you know what? Jesus was kind. I think we've made it through. Since I had to leave a little early, we had gotten through one of the divisions. The other division looked like we had kind of gotten through and we were okay when I left. I don't have primary responsibility for this, and really, I'm more just moral support than anything else. I'm just not really, you know, it's not, because it's, I kind of was in charge when we were doing that stuff, but there are deep places in all that code. I have no idea what's going on. So, and we had a little bit of a hiccup. We restarted some things and didn't quite get everything restart correctly. And because of that, there were some things that confused the system a little bit, and so the system was hung for a while, and so then we restarted again, and then it went through, and when I left, everything was looking good. So hopefully that will continue. So that's all good. I am getting a text message. Just a second, let me make sure that there's nothing extraordinary that is a possible that needs to be taken care of. Let's see. Okay. Okay. Good. Thanks. Thursdays, I have been swinging by the church and helping out getting sound ready. But we have small groups starting up here in about 3 weeks. 2 weeks. Let's see, today is the 8th. Small group starts up on the 22nd, so 2 weeks. And once small group starts up, I've just got to leave work and head straight home. And so I won't be able to help out getting sound ready anymore on Thursdays. So it's been fun, though. It's been fun running by the church and helping getting the sound going and all that kind of stuff. Anyways, I don't know if I finished, but so he's getting his car fixed tomorrow, and that means he's going to be driving my car, and like that, and like that, and like that, and then so I have Nana's car. Nana is always very kind to let me borrow her car when we have these kind of situations where we need to shuffle a little bit, and it's good to have another extra car around. So I'll get her car back to her tomorrow. And we'll be good to go. Let's see. Writing is good. I did finish my read through this last week. Got the book landed last Sunday, if I recall correctly. Got the book landed last Sunday and then did a rough read through, or maybe last weekend. I can't remember. But got my read through done. Got it all laid out. I've started working on the cover now, so I'm going to work on that some more tonight. And then once I get the cover roughed in, I've ordered pirate costumes for the kiddos, for the grandkids, and then it's going to be the challenge of seeing if I can get my grandson to agree to be on the cover. I'm going to try to bribe him with the fact that people won't recognize him because he will have his back to the camera, so maybe that will work. My granddaughter is always happy to be on the cover, so at least she's always happy to get paid to be on the cover, which we do. So that's all fine. If I can get my grandson to be on the cover, I may give him a peg leg. So we'll see. I may not tell him that, but I'm going to give him a peg leg. But yeah, so once we get that cover done, get books ordered, then we start on book 18. And I think I already know what the basics of book 18 are. I don't know all the details, but I know what the basics of the setting are, and frankly, I have no idea how I'm going to get that resolved, because I know what the conundrum is, and it's book 18, if I do what I think I'm going to do, is very much of an underdog story. It's very much of how do we stand in the face of overwhelming opposition? And that's an interesting thing to explore. You know, that's an interesting... it's an interesting scenario, because we do face those situations in our lives where there is just overwhelming opposition. And how we would choose to respond to it is not necessarily how Jesus would respond to it. Because Jesus' approach is, for the kingdom of God, is very much not the approach that we would take. Because we are constantly looking for our own survival, and Jesus is not. He's not either looking for his own survival in this sphere, because he laid down his life for us, and that means he's not necessarily looking for our survival in this sphere, and that sometimes makes us uncomfortable. So it'll be interesting. It'll be an interesting book to write. There's going to be a subplot in there somewhere that I don't have yet. I have a tradition that every book starts with the same character. And there's a reason for that. So I intend to start with that character again in this book, in book 18. But that's not the main story. So I've got to have some kind of a subplot. So anyways, this will be interesting. It's always fascinating to get just dropped in the middle of nowhere, not know where you are, not know what's happening, and just describe your way out. But I have done it for 17 books now, and I only have to do it for 7 more, so I'm very much on the downswing of it. I do have one little issue that I have to resolve, and that is that the last stanza of the poem is shorter than the first two stanzas. and to divide it up into 8 pieces is a little more awkward. I had a fleeting thought that maybe I didn't need to do 8 pieces, maybe I would just do 6 pieces and then make it 22 books as opposed to 24 books, but there's a completism to it that, you know, I kind of like the whole 24 book idea. I've told people that it's 24 books, and 24 books feels balanced and yada yada, so there may be a couple of books of fluff in here where I'm just running off at the mouth. We'll see. We'll see. I think 24 books is still the thing. But if I was going to really make it to the poem, The Second Coming, that third stanza of The Second Coming by Yeats, it would probably be closer mated if I did 22 as opposed to 24. So I just have to figure out now that I'm on it, I have to figure out exactly where those books are going to break. So we'll see. We'll see. I have to think about it, have to look at it, have to make a decision before I start book 18, because that will determine how much. Because the first line of the third stanza is "The darkness drops again." Well, that's book 17. And then book 18 is either "And now I know," or "And now I know that 30 centuries of stony sleep." But I'll figure it out. It'll be fine. I've gotten this far. We'll get the rest of it done. Anyway, so that's that. Costuming. We had fun last week. It was Labor Day, so I did the muscle suit with the Rosie the Riveter tank top, and people seemed to enjoy it. I have a pair of Daisy Duke shorts that I wear with that are patriotic, so they've kind of got an American flag pattern on them and some sequins and stuff, and I got a lot of compliments this year, more than usual. "Oh, I really like those shorts." So there you go for what that is. I did have kind of a cute moment yesterday. So I was listening to Heather Hain and Brent Weinstein, and they were talking about, I need to hold on to because I'm slowing down, so I'm holding on to the recorder here for a moment. They were talking about physical attraction and appearance and mirrors. What effect have mirrors had on the development of society? And Heather Hain was talking about when she was doing some research, biological research somewhere where there were no mirrors. She's talking about her reactions when she had come back from this place where she had lived for months without any mirrors, and the reaction she had to the store windows and seeing herself over and over and over and over in these store windows, and wondering how people could live that way, having to look at themselves all the time. So it was an interesting discussion. And they were talking about the ways in which we react to other people's reactions to us, and how that affects our behavior, and how if we didn't have mirrors, that potentially we would be judging other people's reactions to us with a greater weight than our evaluation of ourselves in the mirror. That they felt like having mirrors fundamentally changed your evaluation of yourself and tended to draw people towards narcissism. So that was all. That was an interesting discussion. But as part of that discussion, I got tickled because Heather Hain was talking about the differences between how men and women relate to the world, and the differences in the way that women are treated in the world and men are treated in the world, and that there is much more focus that men have towards women than women have towards men. So that her claim was that unless you're just a really, really attractive man, you don't necessarily have a lot of women that are just staring at you. Whereas it is women's experience in the world that often you have men just staring at you because of, you know, the targeting mechanisms and the language that we've talked about in the past. Can I have sex with it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I got a little bit amused because when she was talking about, unless you're like a really attractive man, you don't necessarily have women staring at you. And I thought, well, I have women staring at me all the time. Not all the time. Friday mornings and Saturday mornings. And I definitely do not qualify as a very, very attractive man. I am not completely unattractive. I am not entirely unattractive. I have a fairly symmetrical face, but I am definitely not the type of person who, when I walk into the room dressed in normal attire, that people just stop and are agog at me, like somebody like a Brad Pitt or any of the other big Chris Pine or any of those type of guys. When I walk in a muscle suit and wearing Daisy Duke shorts and a Rosie the Riveter, and I'm carrying on cutting up, and, you know, when I walk in an angel costume, when, you know, like tomorrow I'm dressed up as Uncle Sam. And this particular, we're celebrating Uncle Sam Day tomorrow, which it's Uncle Sam dressed in products exclusively from China. So, you know, it's lots of shiny things and et cetera. I will definitely have people staring at me. And I have to say, that whole costume thing really has kind of changed a lot of the ways I move through the world. I was talking to a fellow employee, actually not a fellow employee, a female employee, the other day, and a friend was standing beside me, and we were jabbering about costumes and all that kind of stuff, and it was funny because she went off to do something. He looked at me and said, "Man, she loves you." I said, "Yeah." So, and I have been told that before. The executive that is directly the executive that I answered to, early on when he came, he was talking, you know, to all the people that he was in charge of then. And he had told me, he said, "I go down, I talk to financial services and stuff." And he said, "They all just love you down there." I said, "Well, thanks." I said, "We're trying to do a good job for them and trying to do..." But the costumes, of course. The costumes cause a whole other genre of relationship. And it's basically because of... it's because of what they provide. It's a very, very interesting thing, and without question, my life is richer because of it. And honestly, if men understood more of the potentials that are there and the purposes, and they understood more how to navigate that, I would think that you would see more men doing this. And the fact that we don't see more men doing this, I think, is directly attributable to the fact that men just don't understand. they don't understand the mechanism. So it's all very interesting. It's all just very, very interesting. Today, just real quickly, I thought this was interesting. I came across this article. In the Colorado State Fair recently, this article was written on September 2nd, 2022, in the Colorado State Fair. There was an entry. Jason Allen had made an entry, and he had made it in digitally manipulated photography. That was the category he had made it in, and he won the first place blue ribbon, and he won $300. What made this interesting was that his print that he had done was an immediate hit, and it beat 20 other artists. And what's interesting is that he actually used AI to create this picture. So he did, there's a lot of this, Stable Diffusion? Is that the name? I think that's the name, Stable Diffusion. But there's been a bunch of these now that have come up. Imogen, Google, DALL-E by OpenAI. And there's a bunch of people, they're just popping up everywhere now. And it will not be long before we have movies, before there's all sorts of things that are being generated. And whereas DALL-E 2 and Imogen, they were trying to kind of hold things back and say, no, you can only use it for this and you can only use it for that. There's all kinds of spinoffs going at this point of this. And it's going to be widely available for free. Certainly, there will be some that are better at image generating than others, but there's no question that the genie's out of the bottle at this point. So this article talked about the fact that Jason Allen had submitted, and he had called, he's got the French name here. I don't know. Anyways, he had called this print, whatever, and he entered into the Colorado State Fair. And the article talks about how that Allen's piece offers a clear example of how rapidly AI-generated art has advanced. Trained on billions of internet images, the systems can have decisively pushed the boundaries of what computers can create. But it has also sparked a massive debate over the meaning of art, with Allen facing accusations that he had been deceptive in beating out other human artists with something he asked a machine to create. One of the judges of his piece said it evoked Renaissance arts, but some critics compared it to, quote, entering a marathon and driving a Lamborghini to the finish line. So some people are saying, well, this AI-generated art, it's like automated plagiarism because it relies on millions of ingested art pieces and then just parrots them in mass. But isn't that what we do as artists? I mean, isn't when artists draw things, they are pulling from what they have viewed of all these different artworks and melding it together. And so, you know, that's something to think about. And this type of thing is also fueling deeper fears, and that is of decimating people's creative work, blurring the boundaries of reality, or smothering human art. And yes. I was watching an AI program and they were talking about the fact there was an advertising agency in Japan who has built a little AI guy and trained it up to make suggestions for concepts for advertisements that they do. And they had a human put it together, put some ad campaign together, and their little thing put some ad campaign together and, you know, described it to different people and then did market surveys, and the human generated one won, but not by much. It was just a little over 50% to a little under 50%. And certainly the AI can generate so many ideas so quickly. Well, yeah, it's an issue. Alan said that his art piece shows people the need to get past their denial and fear of a technology that could empower new inventions and reshape the world. The AI, he said, is a tool just like a paintbrush is a tool. Without the person, there is no creative force. So, and that's true, even in this stable diffusion stuff, if you don't give it any prompt at all, then you just keep hitting the enter key. I think for some reason, I read one of them, depending on the data set it was trained on, just kept making like nuns or something. It was, because it would just keep falling into kind of this same genre of images because it didn't have any prompts. It didn't have anything to key off of. And some of these prompts that are fed into these AI systems really are very, very clever, and they're really interesting juxtapositions. And that becomes the seed. And frankly, I'm looking forward to having this available and being able to upscale it to actually do book covers and stuff because, I can use some help. And some of the things they're doing with it now where they're doing multiple pieces and then they're having it merge it together. And it is amazing. So Alan also struck a note of defiance at the critics he believed did not appreciate the profound message of his AI-generated art. Quote, you said AI would never be as good as you, that AI would never do the work you do. And I said, oh, really? How about this? I won. It's here now. Recognize it. Stop denying the reality. AI isn't going away. So it's very interesting. He said earlier this year he started noticing people posting more AI art on social media, but he had initially been skeptical to try it himself due to spiritual reasons. Elon Musk, he remembered, had compared AI to summoning the demon, and the practice felt like it could be, quote, a gateway into communicating with the unknown. Alan said, that's what it feels like. This isn't being created by a human. There's a lot to be said about the spiritual meddling of our reality. They would use anything they could to influence humanity. So that's all interesting. But the piece that he did was kind of a alien scape. It's got planets in the background. It's got like a foreground where he has kind of Victorian women in fluffy dresses. And it's a very evocative piece. It's pretty cool. And he was talking about the fact that the pieces that really caught his attention, though, were what he now calls his space opera series. He started with a simple mental image, a woman, quote, a woman in a Victorian frilly dress wearing a space helmet, and kept fine-tuning the prompts using tests to make a really epic scene like out of a dream. He said he spent 80 hours making more than 900 iterations of the art, adding the words opulent and lavish to fine-tune its tone and feel. He declined to share the full series of words he used to create his art, saying it is his artistic product and he intends to publish it later. If there's one thing you can take ownership of, it's your prompt, he said. He went on to say, I was like, dude, this is so sick. I want to see more of this. I'm addicted. I'm obsessed. And so once he found the images he liked, he pulled them into Adobe Photoshop, removed the visual artifacts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really interesting to see where this goes. So this definitely isn't just the AI sits there and spits all these things out. There's still a human involved, and maybe there'll be a human involved for some time to come, but it is very interesting. Now, as you can imagine, as you can imagine, the wind triggered a flood of rage online. A tweet expressing profound dismay at Allen's win has been liked more than 85,000 times. Another person tweeted, "We're watching the death of artistry unfold right before our eyes." Allen said he has also got a lot of very nasty hate in his inboxes. It's just like, man, people relax. And one user said he should return his reward and, quote, post a public apology before some major backlash comes your way. So other people have found the controversy fascinating. Quote, people put bananas on a wall and call it art. This person said, even photography was not considered an art form for a long time. People said it was just pushing a button, and now we realize it's about composition, color, and light. Who are we to say that AI is not the same? Don't ask if the banana, duct tape banana, is art. Ask if it's any good. So, Gregory Block, an oil painter in Denver who was not a part of the competition, says he finds it hard to imagine an AI generator supplanting the thousands of hours, all the, quote, heart, soul, blood, sweat, and tears, unquote, he has invested in his art. But he also thinks back to the artist that first inspired him, who used rudimentary devices like the Camera Lucida in the 1800s to aid their own designs. Quote, that was thought as cheating too, he said, yet they used it to make these incredibly beautiful paintings, anatomically correct figures, beautiful soft lighting. Those steps in technology are elemental to our art, otherwise we'd still be doing cave paintings with just our hands and blood. The AI, he said, can undo the art with a mysterious beauty made all the more special because it is so hard to understand. But, quote, the soul any of us can find in a piece of artwork, the emotion, the human struggle we identify with it within art is always its own, our own. Quote, it does not have to necessarily be created out of a human soul, the artwork itself. It is for us to see and react to. We are the viewers, in the end, the ultimate artists. We are the ones creating the world that is coming in through our eyeballs. That world is in our mind. So this is just going to be very interesting to see where this all goes. This is Phil Ferrant, and I have made it home. Now I have to shut this off.